Arthur Machen once wrote that strange things are lost and forgotten in obscure corners of the newspaper. This podcast will aim to prove that that statement is true.
Hello, and welcome to Episode 9 of Forgotten Darkness. I'm Andrew Gable. In 1928, three men, well, one man, an 18-year-old, and a 14-year-old, murdered an older man named Nelson Raymeyer in York County, Pennsylvania. Raymeyer, you see, was a practitioner of Pennsylvania Dutch powwow, or Brockerei, kind of a hybrid of faith healing and more traditional magic, and was thought by the eldest of the three killers to have put a curse on him. This is the Raymeyer's Hollow case, to which I alluded way back in Episode 1, and is something I might do an episode on eventually, as it's a story which has always interested me, certainly has enough information available about it. But Raymeyer's Hollow wasn't the first murder associated with powwow, nor was it to be the last. Susan Mummy lived in Ringtown, Schuylkill County, in Pennsylvania. She was an older woman who had been engaged in a dispute with the owner of a farm she had previously occupied, who evicted her and her niece, Tavilia Boyle. Their furniture was moved out, but by the time the landlord's men returned to the town of Shenandoah, the Mummies had moved their things back into the house. So again, their things were moved out, and their cow was moved into a nearby barn, the owner of which, by the way, later billed the county for $5 in rent owed. But within a few hours, again, the Mummies had moved their things back in. The landlord at this point was so exasperated that after he moved their things back out for a third time, he burned the house down. So, that was that. Well, it turned out, no, it really wasn't, because Mrs. Mummy got herself a tent and set it up on the property. Officers drove her off again, and yet again she came back. This time, she built a rough board shack on the property. Police raided the shack and found several guns and axes. Then, somehow, they managed to convince her to leave, for good this time. She took up residence in a neighboring farmhouse, which is the one in which she was killed a few years later. In the previous years, Mrs. Mummy had also gotten a reputation as a witch. Doubtless, her reputation as a bit of a difficult individual to deal with was surely part of it. Around 1910, she had a vision that her husband, Henry, would die at work. On July 6th, her vision was fulfilled. Pottsville Republican, July 6th, 1910. The coining plant or crushing department of the DuPont Powder Company at Ferndale in the Catawissa Valley blew up with a roar heard for miles, completely destroying the building, which contained a large quantity of powder. Henry Mummy, aged 41 years, father of five children, was blown 50 feet, landing on top of an apple tree, and so horribly burned and injured that he can live but a short time. Two brothers of Mummy met death in a powder mill explosion here not long ago. A farmer's team passing near the scene of the explosion was upset by the concussion, and two men who were in it were pinned under the partially demolished wagon, but escaped with slight injuries. The loss will exceed $6,000. Of course, one could argue that the death of both her brothers-in-law in powder and mill explosions had as much to do with her apprehension as her visions did. But, at any rate, since that time, Mrs. Mummy had devoted herself to learning powwow and all manner of Pennsylvania Dutch folk magic. And like Nelson Raymeyer, she could supposedly lay hexes and curses as well as heal. Around 8 o'clock on the evening of Saturday, March 17th, 1934, Old Sus, as she was known locally, was in fact administering a powwow cure to the injured foot of a boarder staying at the house, a Jacob Bryce, when a blast from a 10-gauge shotgun shattered the living room window of her home. The slug struck her in the back, passing through her heart, and killing her instantly. Terrified, Jacob Bryce and Tavilia Boyle hid in the house until morning, when they emerged to call a doctor, who later in turn contacted the state police. Detectives Louis D. Buono and John I. Ferns were dispatched to the farmhouse north of Ringtown. At first, the killing was believed to have been the result of a Hatfield and McCoy-style mountain feud. It was noted that Mrs. Mummy lived in almost constant fear that something would happen to her, and with good reason, for a previous attempt had already been made to kill her. Buono pried the fatal slug out of the wall. It was a homemade pumpkin ball slug, used for hunting as well as warding off devils. He questioned neighbors and found no shortage of potential suspects. For, as one of the neighbors said, Yeah, Mrs. Mummy, she had enemies aplenty, for wasn't she always with folks a-fightin'? With Jake Hilton over a mortgage, with Al Shinsky the jitney driver because he said she'd hexed him, with Paul Stauffer, her next neighbor, over who'd mend the fences, with other folks whose cows trampled her cornfields and whose dogs killed her chickens. Wasn't the old woman always a-crabbin' and a-snappin' at someone? First he checked on Paul Stauffer and found a length of wire set into a groove in the front doorway of his house. Although standoffish and forbidding Buono entry into his house, when taken to the police station to be questioned, he said that the wire on his door was to bar entry to evil spirits commanded by Old Sus. Everybody knows I hated her, he said. She hexed my mules so bad they'd balk and run away. Yes, I have a gun that fires pumpkin bullets, but I didn't kill her, though I'd often thought of it. Later his story was confirmed. His gun hadn't fired the fatal slug. Suspicion then fell onto Villia and Jacob Bryce, but no shotgun of the requisite size existed in the house. This theory was quickly abandoned. Eventually, however, a bullet mold was found in the barn of one of the suspects, a bullet mold for a 10-gauge pumpkin ball slug. The suspect turned out to be Albert Shinsky, the jitney driver. A jitney is an unlicensed taxi cab, sort of an old-timey Uber. He was 24 or 25, according to the account you read, and was born to Lithuanian parents who had at one time lived next to the Mummy house. As is described in one account, a trooper sent to arrest Shinsky was astonished to see him emerge from a second-story window, while explaining that he had thus for months made his exits and entrances, because devils conjured up by Mrs. Mummy haunted his thresholds on the main floor. The family name, by the way, was actually Yasinski, but most accounts refer to him as Shinsky, so that's the name that I'll use. Shinsky confirmed that he had indeed been to see no less than a dozen powwow doctors to try to get some relief from a curse that Mrs. Mummy had placed him under years before. One of those said that shooting her with one of the special bullets was the only way to obtain relief. But he denied actually having shot her and said that he was in Mahanoy City with his fiancée, Selena Bernstell. Soon after, though, a shotgun that had been found discarded in the brush near the Mummy house was found to have fired the fatal slug. It was soon determined that it belonged to a miner working at the West Shenandoah Colliery, and after it was determined that that miner had loaned the gun to Shinsky, the Lithuanian was brought back in. On March 22nd, Shinsky confessed that he had, indeed, slain Mrs. Mummy, and in fact he seemed quite relieved and joyful that he had done so. He had been doing some work at his parents' farm in 1927. Their cows had gotten loose, and he went out to drive them back into the barnyard. On the way, the cows trampled some of Mrs. Mummy's fields. In other accounts, he claimed that it was because he walked through Mrs. Mummy's property on his way to go fishing one day. But regardless, he claimed that after this, Mrs. Mummy came to the fence near where he was working and stood looking fixedly at him. A cold perspiration came over him. He felt a hand drop heavily across his shoulders. He could not work. He went back to the house, and since then he has been bewitched. He claimed that whenever he trod upon the stairs unevenly, to be honest, I'm not sure exactly what he means by this, a monstrous black cat would spring out at him. He also claimed that once a month, and sometimes more often, he would be visited by the same cat, a huge black cat with glittering green eyes, which climbed in his bedroom window and had the face of Mrs. Mummy. The cat would tear at him with its claws, or make him ice cold so that he would have to get up and run around the room to stay warm. He also claimed that the cat could grow to a huge size. often becoming so large that Shinsky was almost smothered by its fur. He would be disoriented after a visit from the cat, and as a result, was eventually forced to quit his job at the West Shenandoah Colliery. He initially hoped the hex would weaken if more distance were put between himself and Mrs. Mummy, so he took a job in Newark, New Jersey. But when this failed to have any effect, he returned home to Shenandoah. His confession continued, "Susie was in cahoots with the devil. I was outside her house fighting those spirits for half an hour, but finally I overcame the spell. Then I let her have it. After I fired the shot, I felt sore all over. It seemed as if something was leaving my body. I fired another shot to keep anyone from chasing me. My back hurt terribly. I had a hard time walking a mile to where my car was parked, but I knew the hex was leaving my body, and I was glad. Just before I got into the car, I shook all over. Then I felt grand. It was wonderful to feel so grand." As to the killing itself, Shinsky claimed that a spirit from the sky, the same evil spirit that had been sent to bewitch him, urged him to kill the woman and free himself from the hex, and incidentally, the spirit from its servitude. It was also noted that several times during the examination, he suddenly stopped talking, looked straight ahead fixedly at the wall, then his face became clouded with the grotesque grimaces as though of fear and pain. He appeared to be in the throes of an epileptic fit. In about 8 minutes, he came out of the spell and was weak, but apparently normal otherwise. He explained that whenever he saw some sharp object, he could not take his eyes from it, and then it developed into a huge black cat with flaming eyes, which snarled and spat at him and continually threatened. He said he could not take his eyes from it, and in the face of that cat, he could see the face of the woman he accused of hexing him. "Those eyes," he repeatedly murmured half to himself. "Oh, those eyes. How I wanted to have them closed. I could not stand them." Police allowed Selena Bernstell to visit Shinsky in prison. She and the murderer were engaged to be married on Easter of 1934, but that was apparently not going to happen now. She asked Shinsky to marry her then and there, but he said that it wouldn't be right to marry a jailed man. Bernstell later said that several times before, when she brought up marriage, Shinsky did say that they could not, since the witch wouldn't let him. She said that due to their relationship, she too was visited by the witch. She claimed that she often saw the ghostly form of Mrs. Mummy, dressed in black robes, standing at the foot of her bed, and occasionally the phantasm of Shinsky himself. "The nights when Shinsky's phantom appeared," she said, "were always ones when he claimed to have been visited by the cat." Despite all this, she said she was skeptical of the hex, but concurred that though the hex may have been in Shinsky's head, the effects on him were very real. Though she made only $9 a week at the shirt factory where she worked, she offered her entire salary to aid in Shinsky's defense, which was not needed, it will be seen. District Attorney Leroy E. Enerline felt that Shinsky was sane and intended to push for the death penalty. "The electric chair will be better than the suffering of the last 7 years," Shinsky said. But despite this belief, on March 25th, he summoned Dr. Walter G. Bowers, head of the Schuylkill County Hospital for the Insane, to examine him. Bowers diagnosed Shinsky with dementia praecox. Now, this is an outdated medical term. Dementia praecox's symptoms were more or less identical to what would today be termed schizophrenia. Bowers said that he would have a colleague examine Shinsky the next day, and if that colleague agreed, then he would recommend to the courts that he be committed. Bowers noted that a few years ago, his brother John was discharged from the United States Army for mental disability and was sent to the county hospital at Schuylkill Haven and came under my care for a long period. The colleague agreed, and Shinsky was committed to the Fairview State Hospital near Waymart. In 1962, Shinsky filed a complaint against Dr. John Shovlin, superintendent of the Fairview State Hospital, alleging that as he had been normal, sane, and competent for the past 4 years, his continued incarceration there was unwarranted and a violation of his civil rights. In 1969, a motion by lawyer William Krencevitz was submitted to Judge Vincent Dalton to release Albert Shinsky from Fairview State Hospital and declare him sane so that he could stand trial for the mummy slaying, for which he had never been formally tried. In October 1975, he was sent to the Wernersville State Hospital in Berks County to await a decision. Finally, in January 1976, he was declared competent to stand trial. But, most witnesses being dead, it was decided that an effective trial could not be conducted, and Shinsky was released. The Mummy Farmhouse was burned down in November 1976. It was assumed to have been an arson, after another fire less than a month later claimed another local landmark, also site of a murder, several in fact. The Tripoli Roadhouse near Ringtown, which was a speakeasy during Prohibition. Albert Shinsky continued living in Ringtown until his death in 1983. He was 74 and had spent more of his life in the asylum than he had as a free man. And from a tale of a murder, we go to another story of a hex, well, sort of. One in which no criminal charges were able to be filed, despite complaints. Reuben Rock was a soldier who served in World War II in the North African Theater. After the war, he returned to his home near Claysburg, Pennsylvania. He was married to Rosella Dively and built a house near Bulls Creek west of town. However, he died on January 13, 1949 of tuberculosis, the house not yet complete. After Reuben had died and was buried, though, Rosella still would not eat or sleep, and often asked about a photograph of herself that her husband always carried. As a lifelong resident of the Pennsylvania mountains, Mrs. Arthur Dively, Rosella's mother, began to fear that her daughter had been hexed. After the family went through the Rock House, they found a box with some items that convinced them that Reuben had been working hexes. Rosella was just crazy to be with him, Mrs. Dively said. She would go to him at any time. That's probably how he did it, by charming her picture that he always carried with him. After he died, Rosie just started wasting away. In the box was found the picture of Rosella they were searching for, with a rabbit's foot attached to the frame. We took Rosie's picture out of the frame. The frame was lying on his hand. One of Rosella's brothers was indicated. As soon as we took the picture out, it began to crawl right off his hand, like a mouse. I told him to take it right away to burn it. He carried it down, holding it tight in his hand so it would not get it away, and he burned it in the fire. That made us safe. Also in the picture frame was a small pamphlet entitled Damnation Railway, describing a train on which the fare was once sold. This sounds like more like a pulp story or something, rather than any sort of magical tome, but whatever. It was said that Reuben's ghost still haunted the unfinished house, though, knocking at the windows and screaming. Rosella was taken to a man named Ed Ferguson, a resident of Bedford County. From his home, he later explained to the newspapers, Rosella sat in this room and saw his face in the pictures on the wall, coming forth from the figures in the calendar. I went straight to the Lord, and the Lord told me that his spirit was not at rest, and because it was not at rest, he was following his widow about. From the descriptions of what he said and did, I'm uncertain whether Ferguson was actually a practitioner of powwow or not. It sounds like a more traditionally Christian sort of ritual to me. But other than the wasting away, often referred to as taking off, or opnema, in the lore of this tradition, nothing about this case really screams powwow to me anyway, to be honest. Ferguson sprinkled Rosella's head with olive oil and prayed. Several times the Dively visited Ferguson, and each time Rosella would temporarily recover, although without fail she would begin to regress a few days later. After a few visits to him, and some visits to the Dively home by the healer, Ferguson determined that the problem lay in that Reuben had been buried in his uniform. So permission was gained to open the grave, and it was exhumed on February 22nd. They took the uniform off him, put salt on the corpse to prevent the entry of evil spirits, wrapped it in a sheet, and reburied it. Then, like in any ghost banishing episode of Supernatural, the uniform was covered with salt and burned. This being done, the spirit was banished from the home, and Rosella began to recover. Unfortunately, Mr. and Mrs. Howard Dively, Reuben's parents, hadn't known about the exhumation, and in true Mountain Feud style, those Dively's and Rosella's parents no longer spoke to each other. Lest you think there's some incestuous going on here, Dively seems to be an extremely prominent name in the area. Not only was his mother's second marriage to Howard Dively, but it appears her maiden name was also Dively. Rosella's parents were Mr. and Mrs. Arthur Dively, and from what I was able to determine, it doesn't appear that any of those three were related to each other. Not closely, anyway. I'm sure they probably were somewhere back along the line, but the Upper Clare Cemetery, where Reuben is buried, that cemetery alone contains scores of Dively graves. Anyway, although Reuben's parents lodged a complaint with the police, investigation revealed that no criminal charges could be filed, as the order for the exhumation had been obtained legally. As for Rosella, she must not have held too much of a grudge over the hex, if hex is indeed what it was, for she was buried with Reuben when she died in 1998. And that's the end of this episode. A list of sources consulted for this episode can be found in the show description. If you have a question, a comment, or know a lesser-known story that you'd like to see covered, leave a comment on the podcast page, post it to our Facebook page at Forgotten Darkness Podcast, or send it to our email at ForgottenDarkness77, lowercase f, lowercase d, all one word, @gmail.com. We're also on Twitter at Forgotten Darkness Podcast. And so, until next episode, this is Andrew, signing off. We'll be right back.